It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. It's human nature to use comedy to work through difficult subjects and feelings, and one local comedian considers that process an art. For the Confluence, Kylie Kaczynski sat down with Krish Mohan to talk about using comedic storytelling to bring people together.
One of the stories I did for an older show was about how one of the first experiences I had in the States was playing basketball, passing the ball to somebody that wasn't on my team, and then getting tackled to the ground and getting a knife pulled out on me. That's like not what basketball is about, I don't think, but in the moment, to me, that was what basketball was about. And I was telling my friend this, and he was like, oh my God, you have to talk about that, because like I think this is a great way to address anxiety, address like what people don't understand about, you know, immigrants coming here and trying to fit into what's normal in America.
So your source material got a little more serious well before the 2016 election, but has that election affected your material at all the way it's affected so many other comics?
I think so. Yeah, I think in the sense of how we've reacted, not just to the election itself, but to each other. You know, like your neighbor could have voted for Trump or Jill Stein or whatever, but that still doesn't mean that they're not your neighbor anymore. So a lot of the material that I'm doing comes from that. It comes from the reaction that I saw people having to each other. I've met so many different people that come from so many different walks of life. You know, it's like the Bernie supporter that voted for Trump, or the Jill Stein supporter that was just going to stay at home, or whatever it was. So I think understanding that there are different perspectives and understanding that there's room to grow.
Right. So your show, Empathy on Sale, is taping at Mr. Small's next week. What else can people expect from this new material?
So it's a lot of storytelling addressing some bigger issues. So addressing immigration, addressing the culture that we have around war and nationalism and things like that. I thought were important to address within the show, especially after we saw such a huge rise in that, such a huge rise in nationalism in and of itself. And I wanted to address that. And it's also, you're getting an outsider perspective too. I'm an immigrant. I was born in India, so I kind of have this outsider perspective. I'm in between two different worlds. So that's where I'm coming from. And, you know, I just got married. And my wife is originally from Erie, Pennsylvania. So her family members are conservative. Some of them are conservative. And that's different worldviews. So that's something that I've been, you know, introduced to. So addressing that side of things is like, what does that mean to be a conservative now? Like, my father-in-law was a Nixon conservative.
Yeah.
That's a way different conservative.
Sure.
Because by today's standards, Nixon's a liberal. You know, like, he had an open immigration policy, wanted to take in refugees. But so this is the type of conservatism that I'm seeing, and those people have room to grow. So some of the social stuff is they have no idea, like, they don't understand, you know, transgenderism or like the various different kinds of gender or anything, and they're probably not going to. But if you sit down and be like, hey, maybe you don't make fun of that person for what they want to identify as, and eventually they'll be like, yeah, you're probably right. So that's the side of conservatism that I'm seeing. And that's the side of conservatism that shows up to a bunch of my shows. Like, I've met a bunch of conservatives that have come to my shows, a bunch of veterans that have come to my shows. And we're like, yeah, I'm technically a conservative, but none of what's happening in the Republican Party is what lines up with my politics. You know, like, fiscal conservatism, if you're going to spend and overly astronomical amount on the military, but nothing into the VA, that's not what conservatives believe in. That's not how you're supposed to spend your money. That's not a way that you help people. So exploring that idea was very important. Again, because we don't need to see them as our enemies. They're in the same fight. They just have a couple different beliefs than you do that, realistically, at the end of the day, probably don't change the way that you believe,
right?
You know.
Do you think immersing yourself with people with conservative ideas has made your comedy more accessible?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I think more than that, it's helped me talk to different kinds of people. learning their language and, you know, learning in terms of how do they view things? You know, how do they view something like transgendered rights? What are they not understanding? You know, what's their concern? Oh, is it about bathrooms? Well, public restrooms are disgusting and awful, and probably we should evolve beyond that, right? And just do single-use bathrooms. Does that make more sense? Good. Now we can clear that off
problem
the table.
Solved.
Yeah, problem solved, you know? And that's, yeah, learning their language and understanding what is and isn't important to them has helped me kind of talk about things from different angles. I think when I would talk about something like immigration, I would just be like, I talked about it in the sense of like, why are we not solving the problem? Why do we need a border wall and blah, blah, blah. But what I didn't even know was a majority of people, especially conservatives, have no idea how difficult the immigration process is, or the fact that you have to go through citizenship. You have to like apply to become a citizen in this country. So educating them and talking to them about that does open their eyes, and now I get to learn how do I educate them? What are the words I can use? What are some important, you know, buttons that I can kind of address to make this a little bit more accessible to them so that they can understand something that they've never even thought about? And that's what a lot of it ends up being is, boy, I never even thought about it that way. And it's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just, and it's the same thing with me is they'll kind of bring up something to me and I sit there and I go, huh, I never thought about it that way. Well, I'm glad I know this information and I can add it to the bevy of information that I already have and learn how to convey all of what I know a little bit better so that you can have this information too. And now we're kind of on an even keel and we don't have to scream at each other across the dinner table.
Right.
You know, like no one's uncomfortable at Thanksgiving anymore.
Well, speaking of evolving perspectives, comedy is sort of at a crossroads right now with subject material.
Mm-hmm.
More people are becoming aware of the implications of joking about things like race, sexual identity, gender. And not everyone is on board with evolving how they're joking about these topics.
We're constantly steeped in controversy. I was just talking to a friend of mine about how comedy is the thing that angers people more than any other art form, which to me is kind of awesome because I think it really shows how powerful comedy can be as an art form, if you look at it as an art form, which I do. So I can kind of see it that way. I'm very curious in sort of in line with the subject is I'm still looking for like a truly conservative comedian in terms of like, can you champion for capitalism or why we shouldn't regulate corporations and you know, like stuff like that. Like, can you explain that to me without the word gay being a punchline? That's what I'm looking for. I don't know if that one exists. There's a couple people that get close, but you know, we're seeing a lot of pushback from comedians like Louis C.K.
Yeah.
We just saw a whole bunch of controversy come out of the stuff that he said. And I listened to the whole set, the whole 49-minute set.
Which featured lines about Parkland school students.
Yeah, it wasn't the best way to address what I think he was trying to address. And I think what he was trying to address is there's kids dying everywhere. There are huge problems everywhere. And, you know, like we have to hear these kids. Like I'm part of that generation. I'm part of the generation. I remember having to wait outside for 2 hours to go through a metal detector. And nobody in my school, you know, a decade and a half ago, even considered going to Congress, even considered doing a protest. We didn't even know what that meant, you know. So to me, this is awesome. To someone like Louis C.K., it doesn't sound like there's a lot of empathy behind what he's saying. It sounds like, oh, this generation doesn't, you know, is a bunch of lazy millennials. Like, it sounds very much like that. And it's like, I've heard that idea before. And now you're just surrounding, you know, people's gender identity and, you know, a bunch of kids that got shot at. Like, that, why are they the target of the
right.
of this idea? So to me, it's just, it's how you say things and what you choose to say really matters. But also understand that what Louis C.K. was doing at the time was also a workout set. So that's not going to be the finished product in 7, 8, 9 months down the road. And that's also part of the reason why everybody's like, don't film stuff.
Yeah. People tend to name the same few people regarding comedy in Pittsburgh, but there is this whole community of funny people here. Do you think this scene is growing?
Absolutely. When I came out into the scene, which was around when I was 21, so it was about 5 years into performing, there were a couple of open mics. I think there were about 3 or 4 that you could consistently do. Now you can get up at least twice a night, any night of the week. On top of which, there are a couple of dedicated spots to do comedy on a very regular basis. The Burning Bridges Comedy Club at Hambones just opened up. The Arcade Comedy Theater, the Steel City Improv Theater, Unplanned Comedy Warehouse. These are all dedicated comedy spots. That didn't exist 7 years ago. And I think that's a testament to the growth of the scene and everybody in the scene kind of coalescing and supporting each other and supporting all these different venues. And that's very important for a scene to grow, especially one in a city like Pittsburgh, which is a blue-collar city. It's a second-tier city. And finally, I think, has started paying attention to the arts a little bit more. It's never going to be as big as sports. I'm completely aware of that.
Right.
So I think there's a ton of comedy in this city, and if you get the chance to see live comedy, that's the way that this art is meant to be seen.
Krish Mohan is a stand-up comic. His live special, Empathy on Sale, is coming to the Funhouse at Mr. Small's on February 1st, where it will be recorded for a comedy album. Krish, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Since the recording of this interview, comedian Louis C.K. has played a sold-out show at Pittsburgh Improv and Homestead and is scheduled for another sold-out date there tonight. Krish Mohan offered this statement in part about the criticism of C.K. and his support for local comedians boycotting the performances. He says, quote, "I think what Louis did was wrong. He had a fetish and he didn't have a good outlet for it, and there were people that got hurt by it and others that didn't. Louis, like a lot of people, needs a therapist. Louis, unlike a lot of people, can afford one. If we want to see less of this behavior, we should be able to offer forgiveness and redemption and not shame the person, but rather the behavior. The unfortunate thing with Louis C.K. is he doesn't think there's any redemption or forgiveness coming to him, so he doubled down on justifying what he did. I hope we can look past our anger towards this man who a lot of people once idolized and look into making each other's lives better." End quote. I'm Kylie Kaczynski. You're listening to The Confluence.
I'm Megan Harris. The Confluence airs live from 9 to 10 a.m., but the news never stops. Find more stories, conversations, and more on our website at wesa.fm/confluence, on Twitter at WESAConfluence, and wherever you get your podcasts. The Confluence continues next on 90.5 WESA.
Here's what's trending in Pittsburgh. I'm Sarah Kovash. 2 people were injured and 3 homes damaged when a pipeline exploded in eastern Ohio this week. The pipeline, managed by Texas Eastern Pipeline System, was more than 65 years old and part of the system that ruptured in Westmoreland County in 2016. And 5 barges wreaked havoc earlier this week when they broke loose on the Monongahela River Monday. The incident led to the closure of 5 Pittsburgh bridges for fear of structural damage. All were eventually reopened. Find more on our website at WESA.fm.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Industrial hemp used to be grown across the state and used for things like clothing, rope, and animal feed. Congress outlawed it in the 1930s because of its similarities to marijuana. The two plants are related, but hemp does not contain the chemical that produces a high. The federal farm bill passed late last year removed hemp from the list of controlled substances. And WITF's Rachel McDevitt reports that means that could restore hemp's popularity.
Through the 1800s, it was common to see hemp growing in fields like this one in Lancaster County. The area was known for the crop. At one point, more than 100 water-powered mills for processing hemp existed in Lancaster County alone.
But these dead sticks are what's left of our unharvested portions of our plants.
Alyssa Collins, a plant pathologist with Penn State Extension, demonstrates one of hemp's uses.
But you can kind of see how stringy this crop is and why it would be good for fiber, because you yank on this and you can't rip that. So that's why it's good for fiber. It's also why it's bad for equipment.
Penn State Extension was one of a few dozen entities permitted by the state to experiment with industrial hemp over the past 2 years. During the summer, just a few small patches were grown in the county for research purposes under a state pilot program. Researchers at Penn State specifically looked at ways to produce the most seeds from the plant. They also discovered some challenges to confront in the next round of study, such as hemp becoming tangled around traditional harvesting equipment. Potential hemp farmers can look to Canada, where the crop is already legal for some best practices. But Colin says Pennsylvania has a slightly longer growing season and different soils and diseases to factor in.
And so we need to make sure that we get varieties that work in our climate and with our seasons and our farming systems.
Collins says the crop might work to supplement a farmer's income if they can grow it without too much disruption. That could be especially helpful to dairy farmers who faced price drops, canceled contracts, and the fallout of international trade disputes last year. At the Pennsylvania Farm Show earlier this month, passersby stopped, stared, and questioned their friends about a towering hemp plant set on a display table. Teens took pictures on their phones. Some people reached out to touch it. Pam Runzer, visiting from northwestern Pennsylvania, was a bit confused.
I really wasn't sure. I thought I knew what hemp was, but I asked my friends, and it's related to marijuana. Is this what marijuana comes from? I'm not really sure.
To be clear, hemp and marijuana are both forms of cannabis, but they are not the same. Les Stark with the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council has been explaining this difference to farm show attendees for over a decade. In the beginning, he says he got a lot of questions like Runzer's, but now he sees more farmers asking where they can buy seed. Stark, who's written a book about the history of hemp in Pennsylvania, says what's old is new again.
Pennsylvania was famous for hemp, especially Lancaster County. We were known for it, and yet now it's just this exciting new opportunity.
But before farmers can take advantage of that opportunity, they're going to need a supply chain, which for now doesn't exist. Erica McBride Stark, also with the council, says farmers will need the security of knowing there is a buyer for their hemp before they put seeds in the ground, and potential processors will want to know they'll have enough product to work with and sell. She says a recent change by the state agriculture department to lift a cap on the amount of hemp individuals can grow will help move the industry forward.
Because in order to attract the investment money we need to build the infrastructure, we needed unlimited acreage. And now we have it, and now there's a lot of big plans going on, and we should have a full-scale commercial processing facility in Pennsylvania, hopefully by the end of this year.
McBride Stark admits she's optimistic, but she believes the hemp industry in Pennsylvania could grow to be worth $1 billion, simply because hemp can be combined with other materials and touch so many different areas. The seeds can be eaten, and many grocery stores already carry products from Canada. The plant can be pressed for oil used as a health supplement. And the fiber can be used in items from clothing to building materials to car manufacturing. It can even be processed into compostable kitty litter.
It sounds ridiculous. You know, it's like we say it can make 25,000 different products, and it sounds like such a gross exaggeration, but it's really not.
It's not open season for industrial hemp just yet. The crop will still be regulated by the state, and the Commonwealth's Agriculture Department is working on new guidelines now. Rachel McDevitt in Harrisburg.
You're listening to The Confluence. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Highways and city streets funnel workers to their offices and factories. In this month's episode of Still Working, 90.5 WESA's series about work, we meet three Pittsburghers for whom the street itself is where their work happens. Today, a bus driver, hot dog vendor, and a street sign maker. Road work.
What's up, guys?
What's up?
Kibbas sausage, what are you doing?
Give me a kibbas and a hot sausage.
Who doesn't like a good hot dog, you know? Everything gets cooked, nice char on it. The hot dogs are nice, big, all beef hot dog. I do a kielbasa, a hot sausage. I even carry a vegan Italian sausage for the people that don't like to eat the regular meat products. People come to my cart and they get a kielbasa John's way. You take the kielbasa, you put it up on the grill, you get that real nice char on it. I'll slice it up a little bit. I got a real special sweet barbecue glaze that I put on there while it's on the grill that'll bake on there, kind of caramelize, get nice and thick. Very tasty, very unique. That's kind of like my specialty. People come from all over the city to get the John's way. My name is John Spellman. I am the owner and operator of the Shady Dog Hot Dog Cart in Shadyside.
Out here in the hallway, these are all our signs that are going to go on the roads. These are our work orders. We stay within the borders of the county. We do all your belt signs, your road signs, police cars, sheriff's cars, fire departments. We do the city-county building, the courthouse, and then we go out on the road and do the jail also. And we do various signs for all those people. My name is Steve Smith. I work here for the county at the sign shop. I am a sign craftsman.
Of course, this is a cruise room. Hey, Donna. The lunch area is there, and the operators come in here, and we get our assignment.
Initially, I simply thought it would be easy. That's it. I thought driving the bus was going to be easy. And I did not realize the detail that is required when driving the bus. The attention to not only what's going on inside of the bus interior, but what's going on all around the bus. I realized very quickly in my training that it requires so much more. My name is Jill Smallwood. I am an operator for Port Authority of Allegheny County. I drive a bus.
We'll cover the metal we have. We have HIP. It's the intensity of the vinyl. It's more reflective so the driver sees it out on the road. And then it runs through the machine like over here. Bruce will run it through the machine and it gets covered. And they stick the metal in there. And what they'll do is they'll trim it off. They trim the edges off so it comes out smooth.
He just jumped out the car, left the damn thing and drive.
I gotta get my dog, my Shaggy, on.
Those are no, come see the pro.
I'm in the corner of Aiken and Liberty in Shadyside. It's a very busy intersection. One direction is Bloomfield. The other direction is East Side. The other direction is Shadyside. And then the other direction is Oakland. Everything starts and stops right where I stand. That is my corner. That is the Shady Dog corner. So it took 2 years to get all the paperwork and all the permits and licenses together to be able to be a vendor there. Getting to that corner was just the first step, you know, and then building a clientele and building a business there and a reputation. It takes time.
Later, guys. Remember, put it in park next time. He jumped out the car, and the car wasn't in park. he wanted his Shady Dog bad.
Hey, what's going on here?
How are you? P1 430, unit 380.
We're on row 17, 3259.
3259 on 17.
Yes, ma'am, and you have a wonderful night.
Okay.
My day starts at 417. Any time I punch in after 417, I'm considered late. I have 13 minutes to go upstairs to the shifter's office, get my bus. I set the controls. We have a computer system, a GPS system that we put codes into. And once all those things are in place, the big brother in the sky knows where we're supposed to be. And by shortly before 4:30, I should be pulling out of the garage.
I had one incident where I had a food truck scope out my corner and realize that I'm not there on Mondays because Monday is a big event and shopping day for me. Being there as long as I've been there, the 8 years that it took me, the blood, sweat, and tears on my corner, for somebody to have the nerve to just drive up when I'm not there and think, ooh, he's had a moderate bit of success on this corner. I'm just going to try and scoop in on his corner. That's just some underhanded, sneaky, dirty business right there. You don't step on another man's territory and think it's going to be okay. You know, that's, you know how long it took me to put the grease on that corner, to put my footprints on that corner?
This is our first stop.
My route travels up and down the East Busway. So I actually turn left out of the garage and go inbound towards downtown. And that's where I start picking up the people that are attempting to leave town. And that's pretty much how my day goes, from Swissville Station to downtown Pittsburgh, from downtown Pittsburgh to Swissville Station. I do that up until approximately 9:37. At that time, it's my lunch break.
I'm gonna do a road sign. It's a work ahead. And we've been doing, we have 48 of them to do different sets for different locations in the county. Kerning is, like, say you write your name out, and in between the spaces, you have spaces between each letter. And sometimes some look a little farther than others, so it looks like you got such a big gap. So what you do is you close it in a little more so it makes it look more even. So we're getting rid of the old vinyl. So this stuff's going to be thrown away. You almost know how far to cut down because this is clear. So your blade, you get used to the pressure on your blade on what you want to cut out. You know, you want to just, like I said, get rid of all the old. And then out here, then you'll see the lettering come.
Ronald.
Yes, sir.
What do you want on it, my man? Peppers and onions and all that?
The people that know the Shady Dog know the fro. I'm a white guy that has a nice big afro. My motto is, those that know, they come see the fro.
Any hollers out today? What's today? You're killing me, big man. You're killing me.
Thank God it's fro day, but you know.
What'd you say?
Thank God it's fro day.
That's what I'm talking about. How do you not get that? Every time you come on.
Friday is TGIF at the Shady Dog. Now, most people relate that to thank God it's Friday. Well, that is everywhere except for the Shady Dog, that is true. At the Shady Dog, TGIF means thank God it's fro day. If you come to the Shady Dog and you're one of the first 10 people to come by the dog and say, thank God it's fro day, you get one on the house.
Who that said that fro day? I'm in winter. Talk to me, Blondie.
Too slim.
I'm very good at reading people. Give me 30 seconds of talking to you, I know instantly how I can talk to you, what manner I need to talk to you, how aggressive I can be with you, how far I can go. As you know, there's some people I call buddy, there's some people I call hun, you know, just knowing people in general.
Oh, you guys, now listen, behave when this young girl walks past here, please.
I'll try.
Come out through here, young lady, don't mind these guys. How you doing, sweetie? Good.
But if I'm to that point where I recognize you, so you've been to my cart enough times, then I pretty much know your story. I'm like your big brother. I'm like your uncle. I'm like your dad. I'm like your neighbor. I'm just that voice in the stranger in the city that's easy to talk to.
I can kind of scan someone and look in their eyes and see most of the time if they're not having a good day or if they might be a problem for me. And instead of pushing those buttons that I kind of know already may exist, I back off. I don't dispute things like the fare. First of all, we were trained not to. But I don't do it because I can already see that this person perhaps isn't having the best day or isn't having a good day. So why dispute 25 cents? There has to be some kind of empathy shown by the bus operator. People are watching everything that you do, and they're listening to what you say. So do you want the reputation of being the horrible, ignorant bus driver? Or do you just want people to say, well, she's professional? There are some days I say, come here for a minute. I say, you always pay $2. Why do you always pay $2? Oh, well, how much is it? I say, it's $2.75. And I usually will add, all these other people had to put in $2.75. And you gotta put in $2.75. They'll say, okay, all right. Port Authority has made it very clear to us. We are not to dispute fares. So so I don't. But I try to level the playing ground among the passengers, because somebody struggled to put money in there for that ride. And I need them to know that I didn't take their money, and then I'm gonna let 10 people behind them ride for free.
There it goes. The vinyl's good, but I grew up painting, so I still do painting on my own also. I do portraits of people's pets around the country. I started years ago. I did my my wife's aunt's pets. But then I go to different shows and things like that. And then I get them just through with a website. But it's just slowly picking up. It's not nothing like, that's like a retirement thing. So I can just sit back and let it come to me.
I did 24 years as a law enforcement officer. I did 7 years in patrol. I spent 13 years in homicide. And I did the remaining, I think it was about four and a half years in the firearms tracking unit. In law enforcement, you pretty much control almost everything. You're in control, and you have the last say. On a Port Authority bus, that is not so. We deal with homelessness. That's not addressed. We deal with people who are just emotionally ill. And we are not social workers. You know, I think it puts some operators at risk, particularly those that work late at night and those perhaps who are women. I think it puts you, you know, at risk. So for those reasons, I think that there should be more compensation. I also think that as the world changes, I think that perhaps our training could change also.
It's tough to remember before the Shady Dog, you know? It's tough to remember before the Fro, and I worked in a nursing home for about 10 years, taking care of the elderly. That was fulfilling but tiring and exhausting. It's hard to deal with people like that and the sick for 10 years, especially I was a young man when I did that stuff. And then I had a couple other small businesses, you know, cleaning, furniture delivery, a couple other things like that, and ran into some friends that had some bars, worked in some bars, and you know, I just never really found my niche. You know, I couldn't work in the corporate world. Just my attitude and my persona does not invite the boss to be telling me what to do, you know.
Okay, now I want to make sure I line this thing up on the right corner. Yeah, we're okay. Then what we'll do is we'll take measurements and we'll measure these. And it's about 5/8 all the way around. Just depends on the size. Every one of them is a different measurement. Then we'll tape the edges down. And after we tape the edges down is when we'll send it through the laminator. And that'll apply this vinyl to the metal sign that you actually see out on the road. That's how we work these. I just gotta fix it a little more so we get it right. And then we'll peel the masking off. And there's your sign ready to go. That's your masking. That's it. It's ready to go on the road now. We'll give it to the construction crew, and they'll just send it out wherever it goes. Put them on little metal easels and get all their stuff and all their gear on. So it's a little safety out there for these guys. So slow down a little bit and just be careful who's around you.
Help yourself to the coolers in the back. Okay, so that's 7 and a kibasi is 11 altogether, my man. I'll tell you what, for you today, since you're a first time, we'll make it 10 even, man.
All right,
thank you, my friend. I appreciate you, buddy.
No matter how many free pieces I give away every day that I'm out there, I'll never forget the time that I sold a total of 7 pieces for the entire day. That was my last day in the North Side. So days like that make you appreciate the days that I have now, where 7 pieces was my total for one day. I give away 7 pieces every day, not even blinking an eye, because that's what made the Shady Dog a success.
I signed up for the reserves. I was like 19 years old, so I have a little bit of a military background. And then from the reserves, I went into this paramilitary organization, which is the police department. And both of those are about service to the community. I tell people occasionally that the military prepared me for police work. Police work prepared me for operating a bus. We're there for employment, of course, but our service is what really can make the difference in someone's life. And it's nice when you can do it and everybody's calm and happy and, you know, getting off the bus with no drama.
Still Working is produced by Margaret J. Krause and Kevin C. Brown with support from the A.W. Mellon Educational and Charitable Trust Fund of the Pittsburgh Foundation. You can hear other stories throughout the month, see photos, and subscribe to the iTunes podcast feed by visiting wesa.fm/stillworking. It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Emotions were high at Pittsburgh City Council's public hearing last night. More than 100 people signed up to speak about the city's pending gun control legislation. WESA's Ariel Worthy attended the four-hour-long meeting. She joins us to know and helps us to find out what happened. Good morning, Ariel.
Good morning.
All right. Legislation in question would ban AR-15-style weapons and certain accessories. Who was there last night?
For the most part, there were a lot of Pittsburgh residents there. However, there were several people who came from other parts of the county and some other parts of the state. One guy drove 2 hours to come to this meeting. Mm-hmm.
So we had regular citizens. Did we have members of advocacy groups as well?
There were a few people who represented Ceasefire PA. There were gun advocate groups there as well. Mm-hmm. We had students from Squirrel Hill High School who actually they have their own anti-gun violence organization,
right,
that were also there.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about a student in just a second. So briefly, what arguments did you hear for and against last night?
Those who were arguing for the legislation, many of them kind of cited the Tree of Life synagogue, right, shooting, just saying that this is a thing that has happened way too much in this country and how they don't want it to continue, and they fully support the ban. Those who were against it, they said that it was unconstitutional, like it's a state law that says that, you know, cities can't regulate, make their own gun laws. So many people were arguing against that, and some people were just saying that they don't believe that the law will be effective because the people who are committing these crimes are not going to pay attention to the law in the first place.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned young people, and you heard from some young people, including Maya Shook. She's the co-founder of that students group that you alluded to. What was at the heart of her message, would you say?
She spoke a little differently from what other people were talking about. She, of course, spoke about the Tree of Life shooting and the Parkland school shooting last February. But she also talked about Jonathan Freeman, who was a student at her high school, who was killed a couple of weeks ago. And she was just saying she would like to see something done because that kind of thing happens more often than these mass shootings. So that was kind of the heart of her message.
Mm-hmm. But even if council does pass the ban, they can't really be enforced until the state legislature acts. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
All right, because as you alluded to, it's a state law.
Right. And many people have also said that it would invite a lawsuit if the city was to enforce the law.
And finally, quickly, so what comes next? Do we know when a preliminary vote might happen?
It was scheduled for February 14th. It's still not kind of up in the air. It is supposed to be next month, though.
All right. Ariel Worthy covers city government here at WESA. Ariel, thanks so much for making the time.
Thank you.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, 1 in 7 adults in the U.S. has low literacy or English language skills. How does that affect their chances for success in life, as well as the quality of our workforce? Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski, production assistance by Meg Fair, Mick Stanelli, Julia Zenkovic, and Alex Lenigan. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good weekend of good news.